Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit Lynda.com/AllAboutAndroid. That's LYNDA.com/AllAboutAndroid. N99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 300,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. Welcome to All About Android, episode 166, recorded on June 17th, 2014, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Ron Richards.
I'm Gina Trapani.
And we are flying solo. We are without a net. Mr. Jason Howell is not here, so I'm in the driver's seat. Luckily, he lined up an all-star guest for us this week, and we welcome back Mr. Kevin Purdy. How you doing, Kevin?
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you back. We're going to need you. We're going to need you this week. So
good to have Kevin on. Love having Kevin on.
Yeah, it's been a while. But it's good to have you back.
It is. Thank you very much for having me. Big week, as they say.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting week because I feel like Gina and I were talking before the show how it's kind of like this is the calm before the IO storm almost, and things are kind of quieting down on the news front.
A little bit.
Yeah, but we got some interesting things to talk about this week. We're gonna be talking about Amazon's maiden phone, Google Fit, the Samsung Galaxy Tab S, and a lot more, including some laughs. So it's going to be a fun time. That said, let's dive right into the news. Well, Gina,
tomorrow's a big day in Amazon land, isn't it?
It is. It's gearing up to be a big day.
The Amazon announcement happens the day after the show airs. The Amazon big event for developers and consumers and press is happening tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific. And I believe Twit is going to be covering it live, which is very, very exciting. It's probably going to announce a phone. And the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the Amazon Android phone will be an AT&T exclusive. So I don't know. That's something. This wouldn't be too surprising, right? I mean, AT&T is Amazon's 3G LTE partner for the Kindle Fire, so they've already got a relationship. And, you know, maybe if it's, you know, if it's a new platform, if this is going to be some sort of phone-based Fire OS, it might need some specific support. And if Amazon and AT&T are already working together, kind of make a lot of sense. Of course, the Facebook phone was also an AT&T exclusive, and we all know how well that did. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not the Amazon phone actually turns out to be something good. Are you guys excited? Are you guys maybe tuning in and waiting to see what Amazon has to announce tomorrow? Or does an Amazon phone just sort of leave you cold? Where are you guys at with this?
For those Kevin, audio where only, Ron shook his head, waved his hands, and scrunched his eyebrows. All three.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not terribly excited about this. I mean, the thing is that the Amazon products we've discussed before are great for Amazon customers, and I'm guessing that there'll be a ton of dedicated Amazon Prime loyal users who I don't know if they'll flock to it, but they'll give it a shot. But you know, way to conjure up the Facebook phone, which I completely forgot about. I got to feel like this will be a little more successful than the Facebook phone.
Yeah, I think so. Wasn't there a rumor about Amazon Prime Data? I would like to see Amazon do something really interesting with their data plan. But go ahead, Kevin. Sorry.
I was just going to say nobody's seen the 3D that's purported to be, you know, in this phone, and it's going to be hard to probably capture it on camera during the event. So it'll be real interesting once the first reports, the first press reports of like I held the phone and here's what it looks like and here's how the 3D works. Should be interesting. I everything else is seems like a total question mark at this point, like the Prime Data and all that.
Yeah, it'll be curious what the real value add. I mean, it's clear that, you know, like Gina, you mentioned the previous, you know, kind of relationship with AT&T and Amazon in terms of the data plan around the Kindle Fire. So clearly there's a previous relationship there. And of course, there's a huge install base on AT&T and, you know, they're, you know, available through most of the country. But whether or not, you know, it'll be interesting to see how many people jump for it and say, okay, yes, this is something I need. This is something that's going to enrich my phone kind of experience. Can Amazon really add that value for users?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about this with a friend of mine. I was like, oh, can Amazon really compete with a great phone? And I was like, I don't think Amazon's competing with like Samsung. I don't think Amazon's trying to make the best phone necessarily. I mean, of course, they're trying to be innovative and do something different with this 3D supposed interface and the five cameras or the four cameras on the front. But what Amazon wants is more Prime customers. They want more customers watching Amazon Instant Video, using Amazon Music, which we'll talk about later. And if you know, using their data plan, they just want more customers in the Amazon ecosystem, and they will price the phone extremely competitively. They'll probably lose money on it, you know. And once if this means more Amazon Prime customers who just go directly to Amazon whenever they need anything, and if that means a device in their pocket, which that is what it means, then it's a win for Amazon.
So everyone believes that it's only going to run Fire OS apps at this point, right? None of us are believing that it'll just run general Android.
Well, you got to assume it's going to be plugged into the whole, you know, their Amazon App Store environment. I mean, it's going to be, I would guess that it's going to be some, you know, similar to the Fire OS, where it's a, you know, a version of Android that Amazon has Amazonified. The question I'm curious about is that, you know, the Fire OS really dumbs down the whole OS experience, you know, those big icons mm-hmm. and the big kind of gallery. And, you know, so how is that going to translate to the phone? You know, how much control are people going to have over the phone? How kind of middle of the road did they make the UI on their flavor of Android? Yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, I guess
it'd be interesting to see. I think chances that are it's going to be a Google experience Android. There's almost zero chance it's going to be a Google experience Android. I think it's definitely going to be some flavor of Fire OS, right? Because there's no way that Amazon is going to put the Play Store with Play Movies and Play TV and the Google Play Store on one of their devices. There's just absolutely no way. It's definitely going to be all Amazon App Store and Instant Video.
I'm going to be very curious to see how that all plays out, especially considering Amazon's reluctance to have a instant video app, you know, kind of rolled out. I'm still using the HTML5 player on my Google TV. So, you know, and although we've seen with the TV box that they came out a little better, you know, kind of a better approach to serving that media, whether or not they kind of extend that to the phone, it's going to be curious. I mean, you know, this is Amazon, you know, branching out even further to pull people into the mothership of Amazon and that Prime experience. But that said, I'm a Prime customer and I have no desire for this, but that said, I'm probably not the average Amazon user. So
you like your Android phones. You like your Google experience Android phones.
I do. I also like to see what Google has got cooking for my whole fitness experience. Over at Forbes, they had the exclusive that Google is going to launch Google Fit, which is throwing their hat in the ring of the whole kind of fitness tracking and health-related applications. This is a pre-Google I.O. kind of exclusive that Forbes had, although Google didn't comment on this article, so that's kind of curious how this is an exclusive. But a lot of their multiple sources say that Google's going to launch the service at I.O. on June 25th and 26th, and that Google Fit will aggregate data through open APIs, instruction sets that will allow apps to share information will announce partnerships with wearable device makers at I.O., as well as allowing interface in with Google's cloud-based services and allow applications to become part of the Google Fit ecosystem. So this was something that's been rumored for a little bit, and this appears to be kind of – this is definitely going to happen at Google I.O. What do we think of Google Fit, Gina? What do you think of that?
It makes a ton of sense. They're launching a smartwatch. The fitness apps, you know, fits right in with that. And Android Police was saying that the way that they imagine Google Fit to work is that it's going to be like Google Play services. It's going to be like Google Fit services, basically, where apps like Fitbit or, you know, Nike Fuel Band or whatever fitness apps you're already using can kind of plug into the Google layer and the Google Cloud, and that, you know, you can track, you know, your heart rate and your steps across a few different apps and have this sort of one main place for that to be. That makes complete and total sense with the launch of the Guatch. Show the smartwatches at I.O. This just makes a ton of sense. I think Forbes is, you know, right on with this.
I'm telling you, that Guatch is spreading. Somebody on Twitter said another podcast referred to it as the Guatch too, and I'm taking 100% of the credit for that, by the way. That's all mine.
Totally.
Kevin, do you agree with Android Police on their assumption of what Google Fit will be?
With Forbes, I guess?
Or with Android Police's kind of jump to the, it's going to be like Play Services?
Yeah, exactly. The thing is that right now there are so many players in the market. There's Nike, there's, you know, Fitbit, there's, you know, and then there's all these apps that run on top of them or don't run on top of them. And where Google tends to, you know, come out on top is they're giving developers access to these things through a kind of calm, stable, well, you know, relatively API. And I'm pretty excited about that. If it was just another entrant into the fitness, health tracking, quantified self market, I'd be a little less so excited because that is a crowded market at the moment.
Yeah, no, I think it's curious because you always kind of wonder when, you know, a big player like Google or Apple or whomever step into the arena of an entire vertical of an entire type of applications, whether it's fitness or music, whatever, whether they're going to roll out their definitive experience or they're going to build a world where other apps can play nicely with them. And, you know, Android Police's assumption or, you know, kind of leap that this is going to be like Google Play Services and allow other people to plug in, which correlates with what the Forbes article says, seems to be like Google's going to say, okay, listen, this is a system that you can plug into. It can enrich your apps. You can utilize our services and then hopefully create better apps, better devices, and that sort of thing that people can use to track their fitness.
And not just that, but Google's got so much built in going for it with fitness because, of course, you can use Google Now to show you some trends about your fitness. It could map your running right to Drive or to Calendar. There's so many things you can think of that are just like almost kind of small projects for Google to do to create a really data-rich fitness environment for anyone who's into that. So seems like really has a lot of potential. It'll be interesting to see how they pull it off.
Absolutely.
I really hope we go to I/O and we see Runkeeper and Fitbit and Fuelband or whoever up on stage talking about how Google Play Fitness, you know, made, you know, their app even better versus Google kind of like stomping in and like crushing them, you know, under the weight of their their user base.
Yeah.
And I said like Google Play Services, I actually meant like Google Play Games, right? So that was the Android Police comparison they made, that Google Play Fitness would be like Google Play Games, which has like achievements and leaderboards and the social component where you can connect your contacts, right? But you build all these games that play into it. You think about the fitness apps plugging into Google Play Fitness that same way. It would be analogous.
And you've got to imagine that. I mean, it's if Runkeeper and the other big kind of I use Runkeeper to track my runs. If they're not there at Google I/O or there's some sort of involvement of that, then you've got to imagine they don't want to set up kind of an adversarial kind of situation with the developers. The idea is to build this kind of platform for developers to build off of, and especially with the Android Wear announcement, this is just a no-brainer almost. You got to imagine this is going to be one of the kind of pinnacles of the Google I/O kind of keynote when they roll out all the interesting stuff. I'm excited. I can't wait to see it. But interesting, another interesting note, not related to Google Fitness, but related to Google, period. Google Chromecast, which is something that we've been keeping an eye on ever since it came out, that great little dongle for $35. I'm seeing more and more applications get added recently. Everyone's got World Cup fever and ESPN. Their Watch ESPN app added Chromecast ability, and they're running commercials during it, which is pretty cool. But that said, a recent research report came out that use of the Chromecast is declining, which is interesting. Maybe it's the novelty is wearing off. But according to Parks Associates, a market research firm, they said that in, you know, the three key functions that are being used, displaying web pages on your TV, listening to online music, and watching online video on your TV, are all declining in Q1 2014 when compared to Q3 and Q4 of 2013. You can see here in that graph that watching online video is clearly still the main thing that people are using their Chromecast for, but less and less people are using it to stream music and to stream web pages to their TV. So what do we make of this? I mean, I, for one, am barely using my Chromecast. Partially because I have the Google TV. I have it plugged in, but I don't use it that much. But Gina, are you still on board with your Chromecast or?
Yeah, I'm a big Chromecast user. I think the thing about the experience that I don't like, and I think this is the reason for the decline, is that you have to think, like, oh, can I cast this? Does this app support Chromecast, right? Because let's face it, like any web page that's just like playing video, the performance is crappy. You know, that the video doesn't sync, the audio gets messed up, you have to reload it. I mean, I just try to imagine me explaining to my wife like why CBS.com like just doesn't cast well. It's the worst. It's the worst experience, right? And so I do use my Chromecast when I can and when I know the app I'm going to use has it. Okay, like if I'm going to watch something on Google Play TV, like of course that's going to work and it's going to be great. But there are other cases when it's not. And I think that what Google really needs is just cast my entire screen, whatever is on my device's screen, cast it, but it has to perform performance has to be seen, you know, like flawless every single time. And I think it's just that like fighting with it and just having a bad experience that maybe is turning people off. Maybe there's just so many boxes under people's TVs that they forgot about it. You know, the little dongle in the back is hidden and they just forgot.
Well, I also think if you're looking at that, like the key, the one function that's used the least, it seems, is the display web pages on your TV. And think about the last time we were like, oh, I want to pull up that web page on my TV. You know, I feel like everybody is fine with pulling up web pages on their phone or on their laptop, and you want to watch video on your TV. That's what it was made for.
Oddly enough, among folks I know, it's become a great like go-to conference tool. You know, like just throw your $35 Chromecast in your bag, bring it to somewhere where you're not sure if the projector is going to work or whatever. And I know quite a few folks who use it as kind of like a go-to presentation tool. That said, like Gina said, it requires a bit of forethought, much more than say like an Apple TV or a Roku. And the Roku just got a pretty decent YouTube app officially from Google. So there goes one less reason for Chromecast, I guess, at least for home use.
That's a good point. So we'll see. I mean, Chromecast at this point has been a bit of a novelty item. So we'll be curious to see what they roll out at Google I.O. and how it plays with Chromecast, and then what the future of the device is, being such a low-cost device and seeing that they really seem to be committing to having it, working with developers and rolling it out to really kind of mainstream kind of applications. But you know, if this trend continues, it could be a interesting story for Chromecast. Now, keep in mind, it's only been what, like 8 months of the Chromecast being out? Like if that, we're talking back to Q3, 2013. So it's still very early in the life of Chromecast, I think.
Still no Spotify, by the way.
Well, there you go.
Still no Spotify.
It was so cheap. It was cheap enough to be an impulse buy, and it got a lot of hype initially. And
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see if Google talks about the Chromecast at all at I.O. next week.
Yeah, you got to wonder how much of this is a bit of the novelty kind of wearing off. People are like, okay, yeah, I know what it does, and just kind of trending down. I also don't know how they found these numbers, but still, that's any of those market researchers, you always wonder. It's a sample size and that sort of thing. So
yeah, they surveyed 10,000 homes.
Right.
So, okay. One last bit, and we had to bring this up just because friend of All About Android, Ron Amadeo, who's writing over at Ars Technica, he wrote a 40,000 word, 26 page history of Android, which is just like epic from the perspective of like, if you're a historian, if you're interested in Android, if you want to see in one giant graphic the history of Google's home screen or Android's home screens back to before the G1, you should check out this article. It's the history of Android, called The History of Android, The Endless Iterations of Google's Mobile Operating System. Yeah, that's the mega graphic. Ron Amadeo makes a really good point that like early on, for so long in early Android releases, it was almost impossible to take screenshots of the operating system.
So, forgot like, about that.
The harder it is to find screenshots because there were just so few of them out there. You had to hook up the debugger and do all this crazy stuff. So he compiled a massive and detailed and thorough history of the operating system, talking about how Android has just iterated so quickly and come so far. And something worth checking out.
And so it also serves as a mini history of Google's design sense, right? As you watch it go from like chunky clocks and, you know, everything's got a window shade and, filters on the side to just this kind of modern, ultra minimalist, hour hand and minute hand, like floating in the ethereal, iOS 7-ish colors. It's amazing read. It is 40,000 words. It is amazing, though.
Yeah, I feel like it's a must read for any kind of Android enthusiast. You know, when you see it kind of from the beginning stages to where we are today, it just kind of gives you kind of a little bit more, kind of respect or just appreciation for how far it's come since it started.
Holy moly, the way the browser used to work was insane.
Well, just something like Gina mentioning the screenshots. Like I remember we used to have to hook the phone up via USB to the computer and do that. It was this arcane method of getting screenshots, and it's something so simple that you kind of take for granted now. But it was at one point it was a difficult thing. I for one missed the little gray tray bottom at the application tray that you could drag up from the bottom of the screen. That was fun. But yeah, it's fun. I actually never even got to see the video that we're seeing now, the original incarnation of the 2007. I actually never saw a device running this version. So it's kind of cool to see this video. But yeah, good job, Ron. That's an awesome article. So
yeah. Yeah. It's book length.
Yeah. He could, actually Wade County in the chat room said he should release this as a Kindle single. It could be a book. It totally is the beginning of like a history of Android book. So very cool.
It's true.
All right. So we're talking guaches, Gina. What do you got from this email?
We're talking guaches, and we have an email from Matthew. Matthew writes in, I know you've been talking a lot about the Google Watches. Guaches? See, it's catching on. I've been hoping to hear some of your thoughts and opinions on the Kairos watch, kairoswatches.com. I know that a lot of people complain smartwatches are just ugly or clunky or whatever you might want to describe as a blocky piece of tech on your wrist. And these guys seem to be trying to fix that. They say they're using Android Wear, clearly have a beautiful design. But the problem I keep running into is the watch doesn't exist as such, and they're asking for a lot of money for something that doesn't exist, basically just selling on an idea. Matthew says, I've supported a few Kickstarter campaigns and received everything I backed, but this just feels a little more iffy. It's at least double the cost of the Moto 360. It's from a company that seems to be brand new. I'm all for startups trying awesome new ideas, but wow, that is asking a lot of trust for a product I can't yet touch and feel. Anyways, the Kairos watch seems like a really cool idea and a super great design, but I would really be interested to know your thoughts on the project. Maybe you guys know more about the company project than I do. Would you do it? Thanks, Matthew. So yeah, Brian's got the Kairos watch website up there, and it is kind of a really interesting design, different design. It's a mechanical watch with a kind of smart watch screen on top. And I'll be honest, like, it's not really my style. It is a style. It's not my style. I had never heard of this company before. And these watches, you can pre-order, and they start at $500. And I'll be honest, like, oof. That's a little too much money. I haven't backed a Kickstarter campaign from a company that I'd never heard of at that level. I don't think I've backed a Kickstarter campaign at that level ever before. That is a lot of money to spend. Yeah. And it goes up to $1,000. There's one for $1,200. So I want to know what you guys think. Matthew, I wouldn't do it. I would wait until it came out, and I'd want to see it. I'd want to read some reviews before I invested that kind of money into an idea. But it is really cool to see innovation around smartwatches. What do you guys think? If you were in love with this watch, would you pre-order one?
Kevin,
Ron, what do you think?
Yeah, Kevin, are you going to put your money down for this watch?
Like, I wish there was a smartwatch that looked like a Timex Easy Reader as opposed to the I run a submarine in the future style that is currently all the vogue. Like if you really liked this particular design and $500 wasn't going to hurt your mortgage, still, I mean, I don't know. Like, you don't know what developers they'll be working with. You don't know what the app situation is going to look like with in a few months. It's a tough call. You can totally wait to see what happens when it comes out.
Well, so first off, I think this is probably the coolest thing I've seen all week. The idea of a mechanical watch and smartwatch hybrid is kind of genius. And the fact that what they've done is it appears they've made a translucent screen where you can still see the clock behind it, but then you get all the Android Wear functionality on top of it. Like, that's freaking cool. I mean, Gina, I do agree with you, like, especially this gold copper version that we just saw. Like, I don't know if it's my style, but conceptually I think it's awesome. I think it's really, really cool. And it is super expensive, but I know guys who spend way more than that on watches that aren't smartphone watches. So but I do share the bit of kind of concern or trepidation that he has over dropping the money for something that you've never actually seen, that it's a hypothetical project. But in this day of Kickstarter and all this sort of stuff, most likely these folks, if they've got their stuff together enough that they're rolling out this kind of, you know, website and this kind of product and all this sort of stuff and taking that money, they're not going to take the money and run. There's a certain commitment to the project. Whether or not the company sticks around or has any legs to them is another story. But actually later on in the show, we're going to talk about a couple of Kickstarter projects that are similar, which are examples of, at least one of these is an example of, through the support of, Brian, good job. That makes up for flashing the rundown on the show earlier. So there you go. There are companies who are indeed using either advanced payments, advanced pre-ordering, or Kickstarter or Indiegogo or whatever to fund these projects. For example, Coin that came out a couple of months ago, that credit card, all your credit card data in one card. Like, that came out, admittedly, that was $50, but I dropped $50 right then and there because I wanted it. I've never seen the product. They haven't shipped anything. They claim it's in the wild and people are using it. I haven't seen one. I don't even know if I'm ever going to get one, but I took a risk. For me, $50 was enough to take a risk for. Maybe for some other people, $4.99 is enough to take a risk for, and they'll give it a shot.
But can I just say one more thing about these projects? Is that as the owner of a Pebble Watch and a Google Glass headset, if you are the type of person who is embarrassed explaining what you're wearing to people, do not buy it. Because, like, that watch has a translucent display. Like I said, it looks like you are on some kind of Jules Verne expedition to the center of the earth. You should not buy it if, like, you're the type of person who does not want to talk to people in a bar or coffee shop about what is on you at the moment.
Well, that is a great tease for more stuff that we've got coming up on the show as well, too. But, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's cool. I think the innovation is neat. And I think that sometimes innovation, even though it takes the form of odd steampunk-inspired design.
Yes, that's what it's like. Yes.
It does have a cost, though. So, you know, who knows? Maybe it's not right for you. Maybe the next one will be. I wouldn't be too afraid of those kind of projects, though. So that's cool, though. Good up for the Kairos people. So that's pretty cool. I just think it's so cool that it's a translucent screen. I mean, as amazed as the Moto 360 that I was, that it was a circular screen, like this it's circular and translucent.
Yeah, it's a translucent touchscreen over a giant mechanical. I agree that, like, it is very ambitious, and I really like that. It's just not necessarily something I'd want on my wrist. Now, yeah. If there was something that I really wanted on my wrist, I still would be a little concerned. I've seen so many Kickstarter projects that are just, you know, a very small piece of plastic iPhone holder that was like 8 months late, right? Because the manufacturer screwed up or whatever, there are quality control issues, and this looks like a really complicated project. So yeah, I mean, but $500 represents different things to different people depending on what your budget's like. So it really depends.
I do think it's really interesting to see. Oh, look, there's a call coming from Gina. I do think it's really interesting to see other companies getting in the Android Wear game, because up to this point, we've only heard of the Moto 360 and the Guatch and the other. There's another one, isn't there? A third one. But to see kind of out of the gate, kind of upstart, kind of startup companies really embracing the platform and build and innovating there, I think is a good sign. So
that is a good sign for the ecosystem for sure. Yeah.
So, but we'll get back to embarrassing hardware and crowdfunding. But first, we want to thank our sponsors for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. Gina, why don't you tell us all about Lynda?
Thank you so much to Lynda.com. Lynda.com helps you learn and keep up to date with your software, pick up brand new skills, and explore new hobbies with easy-to-follow video tutorials. If you want to create a graceful user experience for your website, build interactive web applications, or design your website with Photoshop, Lynda.com offers thousands of video courses and a variety of topics. At Lynda.com, there are hundreds of courses on web design and development. You can learn everything from web fundamentals and mobile development to creating responsive web design and user experience. If you're interested in creating an app for multiple platforms, Lynda.com created a playlist for building cross-platform mobile apps that are available now at Lynda.com/allaboutandroid. Learn the latest tips, real work techniques, and best practices from their courses on Photoshop as well. Over 2,400 courses at Lynda.com, with more added weekly. All of Lynda.com's courses are produced the highest quality, not like the homemade videos you'll find on YouTube. Lynda.com works with the software companies to provide you updated training the very same day new versions hit the market, so you'll always have the very latest skills. At Lynda.com, the instructors are accomplished professionals at the top of their field and passionate about teaching. The courses are for all experience levels, beginner, intermediate, and advanced. You can watch from your computer, tablet, or mobile device. And great news this week, Lynda.com's Android app just got Chromecast support, so you can lean back and watch your video courses right on the big screen on your TV. Whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours, each course is structured so you can learn from start to finish. You can also search the transcripts to find quick answers or read along with the video. Lynda.com also offers certificates of completion when you finish a course, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile, which is great if you're professional in the field. Lynda.com is only $25 a month for access to the entire course library, or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructors using the same project assets that they do. You can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Go to lynda.com/allaboutandroid to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. Thank you so much to Lynda.com for sponsoring All About Android tonight.
Excellent. So let's move over to some hardware. Well, it wouldn't be a show if we didn't get to talk about Samsung. Samsung's always got to be represented. We got to ring that bell.
Of course, of course. Samsung, they just keep making things. They launched a new line of high-end Android tablets this week, the Galaxy Tab S. The Tab S comes in 8.4 and 10.5-inch screen sizes, high-res, Super AMOLED displays. Samsung claims the devices can deliver more than 11 hours of 1080p video playback on a single charge. The Tab S has a fingerprint scanner like the Galaxy S5, and this fingerprint recognition app can toggle between users up to 8 people on the device, on one device. The global cellular version of the Tab S will support calls and SMS. You'll be able to answer calls from a paired Samsung phone, not right on your tablet. And in the U.S., both sizes of the Wi-Fi Tab S will go on sale in July, with the cellular versions arriving shortly afterwards. So the Tab S 10.5-inch will cost $499, and the 8.4-inch will cost $399.
I'm hearing this get compared, and I feel like we hear this every time a new tablet comes out, but like this is going to be the one that's going to compete with the iPad.
You think this is going to be the one?
Well, that's what I've heard. I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, but from the size and from the specs and from the price point and everything like that, you know, from the analysis of this that I read was that this is, you know, finally an Android tablet that will compete with the iPad, you know. I don't know if I feel like that's not an unbeatable goal, but it's kind of like the windmill that is tilted at by all tablets. But supposedly this one's supposed to be pretty much close to the real deal.
It looks beautiful. It looks super thin, and the screen looks amazing.
I like them touting colors you've never seen before on the AMOLED display. Like, they're colors you don't even know exists. It's like blurple and breen.
Just going through Tumblr GIFs is going to be like a psychedelic mind-altering experience. Your brain is going to explode.
This is this video is the official Samsung kind of walkthrough of the tablet with this guy who's very into it. But it looks like a nice device.
It's funny. I just don't get excited about especially the bigger tablets now. I think I've sort of settled. I mean, I honestly am not a huge tablet user, but I've sort of settled on the Nexus 7 and the 7-inch as like the size that I want. I know there's a huge market for these. People love them. I just I don't know. I'm just not there. This one looks like a good one. If I wanted one that big. I like the fingerprint scanner.
What do you think?
The primary press shot that shows the grid of like five apps open at once or whatever. That's like your worst nightmare when you're sitting down with a tablet and you're like want to relax or whatever. Like all of a sudden it shows you your calendar, a clock, a giant thing with someone saying, "Hey, want to go get pizza?" And then like it seems like the worst way to advertise a tablet is like, you know how you use the iPad to relax and read things? Not this one. This is the like 8 inches of pure you can't escapeness.
And it like pairs with your phone, and so like that shot actually, Brian, it's in the Android Central art in the first link in the article. There is a lot going on in that screen in that shot. It is kind of overwhelming. It's not really. I mean, and when you think of tablets, you don't really think of multitasking, and so it's funny that Samsung is kind of playing that up to a certain degree.
Yeah. Right, it's like that's a design choice that it's not multitasking, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not a lack of functionality, right? It's a design choice, but yeah. It's just like reminds me of Windows.
Oh, jeez, don't say that.
No, okay. Well, like that's a thing. Windows is a thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to shut up now because we're going to get all sorts of email.
But that's not it from Samsung, right, Gina?
In other Samsung news, or rather rumors, EV leaks. Thank you. Brain drain. Apparently leaked what looks like a press render of the Samsung Galaxy F as in Frank, or maybe it's the also rumored higher end Galaxy S5 Prime. Anyway, the photo that EvLeaks put out there shows a phone that looks like a slightly larger Galaxy S5 with a metal rear cover and a white on gold color scheme. So. who knows? And the date is sometime in September. It says Wednesday, September 12th. That September 12th isn't actually a Wednesday. Often the press renders will show the date of the launch. So who knows? Who knows what this is? But Samsung's making phones. More of them. That's the takeaway, folks.
They're making fancy phones with fancy backgrounds. That's what they do. So I don't know. Evleaks normally is pretty good. A pretty good. I don't know about reliable source, but an interesting source of these early kind of leaked photos. So it'll be interesting to see if that comes through or not. But so going back to the topic of crowdfunding, some two interesting pieces of hardware that that were of note. First up is the Ear-In wireless Bluetooth earbuds. This is a project from some folks over in Europe, and I gotta admit, this is really cool. They set up a Kickstarter goal of £179,000, and they blew through that goal in 3 days, and gaining more momentum as we continue. These are basically two completely wireless, independent earbuds that work. Apparently, they just do it. They just do their thing. They pair with your phone, so you can listen to audio as you're walking. No cables, no cords, or anything like that. It comes with a little canister where you can store them in it, and while they're stored in there, they're charging. So it's this kind of nice self-charging kind of solution. And apparently enough people believed in this that they ponied up the money to chip in for the Kickstarter, and they raised almost £180,000 in just 3 days.
How much are they? Like if you backed it?
That's a very good question.
How quickly do you lose them?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of questions. How quickly do you lose them, and how quickly do you does it take for a charge? How long does it take for them to charge up? Apparently, they're going to sell for £99 when they're all said and done. So that's going to be like what, about $150 sure. American?
So yeah. If your dog eats them, you can play Spotify through your dog. I don't know if that's just because that's my life, but like those things look like a dog just wants to eat them. And then you'll be calling your dog, and at least you'll be able to like tell when your dog gets too far away from you because your phone will de-pair from it. It will be amazing. Secret use for this Kickstarter project.
Just for $150, you can have a free dog tracker that will pass through him eventually. But
yeah, New York City parents living in busy, crazy times. Just have your kids swallow one each, and then like you'll always know where they are.
Well, it is interesting because not only you know there are a lot of questions as to you know how much it will be, and now we see what the price would be, but also how long now it will take. They have a prototype, they show it working in the video, but now they need to move into the manufacturing mode. So the question is, how long will it actually take until people get the product and then can track their dogs or listen to Spotify through their dog or whatnot? But interestingly enough, a previous Kickstarter that we had talked about a couple of months ago, Pressy. They achieved their goal, they got their funding, and now they are actually starting to ship their devices. If you remember, Pressy, it is the programmable buttons that you can utilize with your phone, and you can use in your headphone jack and set up a button that can control your phone however you want it to work. So they are ready to go, and that they are, you can see there in the photo, they're packed up and they're starting to ship. So people who did back this Kickstarter project will be getting their Pressy devices, and people will start using it. So even though despite all the delays and the setbacks, it's actually coming to fruition. So it does happen. Crowdfunding does work sometimes.
This is the thing though, like looking at the Kairos watches and how complex and new and ambitious that project is. Pressy looks awesome, right? But it's basically a headphone jack with a button, right? With no wire, right? Like it's a pretty simple, not to reduce or minimize, but it's a fairly simple device. And like they had trouble shipping that on time. So I look at something like the Kairos watch and think, the chances of that going out on time seem really low. But I'm really glad Pressy's getting out there. It's kind of cool. It's a kind of cool use of the headphone jack to add another physical button to your phone. I don't know that I sit around wishing I had another physical button on my phone, but like I could see the use of like having a camera shutter available and that kind of thing. So good for them. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they're getting it out the door.
You know what's funny is that in the article here, they talk about the delays, and they say, you know, the fulfillment has been plagued with setbacks and delays, with the original estimated delivery day for Pressy way back in April. It is June 17th.
June 17th.
It's like way back in April. I would understand if it was April 2013 or something like that. But that is, a couple of months, I think, is that's hardly plaguing with delays. That's a that's you could still characterize that in weeks as opposed to months there. So
yeah, that's a good point. And even just building the app, that's a fast turnaround time. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez.
Yeah. So
point taken.
Point taken, sure. but it's happening. So if you were one of the 30,000 people who backed Pressy, you'll be getting your button soon. So yeah, that's pretty cool. So we know it's also pretty cool. Huawei, they're a pretty cool company.
Jason pre-recorded a nice little mini review for us of the Huawei Ascend Mate 2 4G LTE. Jason, Brian.
Hey guys, what's up? I'm enjoying my vacation away from you guys, but I couldn't keep myself off the show apparently because I have here the Huawei Ascend Mate 2 4G LTE. I was kind of interested to get in on this device because it's Huawei's kind of effort to bring a high range device to the US. And, you know, they invited me to an event and I had to sign an NDA. It all felt very official. So that was kind of cool. But I spent the last week with this device, which is a 6.1-inch phablet. Ron, what do you think about the phablets here? I'm thinking this might look a little better in my pocket than either yours or Gina's pocket. It's a very large device, as you can see here, with an HD display, 720p, not 1080p. But the big deal here is the battery, 3,900 milliamp hour battery. It literally got me through an entire weekend without having to plug it in. And I wasn't even like ramping down my usage. I was using it with my SIM card from T-Mobile. It was my phone for the past week. And I've just been continually impressed by the battery performance. It's a super, it's just a great killer feature of this device. Camera, maybe not so great. I mean, it's good in great light, low light, not so much, but it has some cool software features like Groofies. I'm sure you guys love that word, but it's basically kind of like a wide-angle selfie that you can fit just a bunch of people in by taking a kind of a selfie panorama shot. Pretty neat stuff. But anyways, I did a full review of this device that you can check out on this week's Before You Buy. Go to twit.tv/BYB to check out my full review. But ultimately, I think $300 unlocked through the Huawei website, works on T-Mobile, works on GSM, essentially. I think it's a pretty darn good value, considering what you pay for what you get. So there you go. Anyways, I don't want to keep you guys, so you guys have a good rest of the show, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
And that just made me miss Jason that much more. Just seeing him.
It's true. He's so confident. He's so confident.
That is a very large device. I gotta give him credit. That takes the whole phablet kind of size. You know, it's deceiving because Jason has such large hands, but it looks right.
It is Jason size.
That's a great still, by the way. There you go.
Poor guy.
Yeah. So that's interesting. The Huawei Ascend Mate 2, interesting device. Definitely wanna the Groofy is something I could do without as well too. But it seems pretty cool beyond that. So. Referring back to earlier, we were talking about Google Glass, and Kevin, you mentioned how you know, if you don't like to talk about the hardware that's on your body to other people, that maybe Google Glass and big watches and things like that aren't for you. Well, we got a little fun poked at us recently by The Daily Show. Those of you who might have saw it last week on June 12th, The Daily Show ran a segment basically covering Google Glass in that unique Daily Show kind of way. Jason Jones was the correspondent. Who did this segment. And if you see there in the group of Glass Explorers they're talking to, you might see a familiar face there, Cecilia Abadi from LinksFit, and previously on an episode of All About Android. There she is in the lower right-hand corner. Unfortunately, she got skewered by Jason Jones at one point.
She really did.
So in that video, not only was Cecilia there, but she was joined by the infamous Sarah Slocum, who was the person who got attacked in a dive bar in San Francisco for wearing Google Glass and became somewhat, you know, pseudo-famous or whatever for it. You gotta know when The Daily Show contacts you and asks you to come on, they're gonna make fun of you. Like, in that, like, I gotta give these folks credit that they willingly participated and allowed their Google Glass use to get skewered. It was a well done segment. But it's actually funny though, because I was in San Francisco when I saw them filming it, and we saw them doing one of the bits in front like we're seeing here, and asked one of the producers, like, what are you doing? Like, oh, The Daily Show, we're doing anything on Google Glass. And my first immediate thought was, oh, dear God, please don't play my clip. Oh, please don't. So,
they would have gone to town with that, Rob.
Yeah, luckily I dodged a bullet. So there we go. But, you can, the clip's up on YouTube. If you want to make fun of Google Glass, you can go find it on YouTube. Just search for Google Glass Daily Show, and you can find it there. It was pretty funny. Did you guys, Gina, you saw it. Kevin, did you see this, or?
Oh, yeah. You think that, like, oh, it's a Daily Show. I know how they do this. They interview people. They cut away. They skewer it. But then the part where he goes out in the street with the Fujifilm disposable strapped to his face. really good.
Well, I like the whole kind of approach to it, where, you know, the explorers are complaining about being discriminated against, and that was the original angle they took about it, that there's a group of people being discriminated against, and then he slowly realizes that it's ridiculous. So only in the way The Daily Show can do it.
One of them described themselves as an explorer, like, when you're an explorer, and he was like, oh what? Do you hear yourself? Christopher Columbus was an explorer. Like,
Magellan was a couple
of really good moments. It was good.
So yeah. So hat tip to Cecilia and the rest of the explorers for being good sports about that. Cool.
Definitely.
All right. Let's dive into some apps. All right, so on the eve of this Amazon event that's coming up, we get the news that Amazon rolled out Amazon Prime Music to its Prime subscribers, giving them access to thousands of songs, actually over 1 million songs, and hundreds of curated playlists to Prime customers. And it's really interesting that this is basically, it's not a Spotify killer or any insert music service here killer, but it is yet another piece of value that is being given to Amazon Prime customers as they continue to give them more and more services, whether it's streaming video and now streaming music. If you're Amazon Prime, you just got another reason to be thankful for your yearly subscription fee. So I have not played with it or used it because I've generally been unimpressed by Amazon's streaming music services. But I'm going to go check it out and see if it rivals my Google Play Music that I use on a daily basis. What do you guys think of this one?
Just seems like Amazon's just trying to cannibalize, like, anybody who pays a monthly fee for a streaming music service, right? If they've already got Prime, which is, that's the same audience, right? There's a chance that they're going to be like, I'm not going to pay the extra $8 a month for, you know, Listen or whatever service that you like the best. It doesn't sound like they have the product right now that really can compete. They're missing tons and tons of artists. So they weren't able to strike a deal with Universal, so they're missing a bunch of artists. But it sounds like this is a start to something. And it's interesting. Amazon seems to be consolidating a bunch of their apps. So, like, the Amazon Music app will replace the Amazon MP3 and the Cloud Player apps on Android and iOS. And with the Cloud Drive stuff, they also merged Cloud Drive and Kindle Personal Documents. It sounds like they're consolidating all of their services to make make the names really straightforward and clear, have all your storage in one place. And I think that this is just all groundwork for tomorrow's announcement of whatever this device is.
It's good, especially in the way that you can just add albums to your existing Amazon MP3 library. Ron, you're not a fan of it. I buy most of my music through Amazon MP3 just because it is relatively easy to download it again. And for a while, it was kind of my favorite way to buy music on Android. But the way you just kind of click and, like, add an album to your library, and then when you're shuffling through your music, it's just there as if you bought it, is really interesting. You know, not a lot of other services work that way. So
it's funny you say that, because I was right there with you a couple of years ago. I mean, Amazon MP3 was my choice over iTunes in terms of where I was buying music from, because I could download it and it was a little cheaper and it was all that sort of thing. And then, but once I signed up for Google Play All Access, I honestly stopped buying albums, and I've just been adding titles to my library through Google Play Music, and, you know, and using it that way. I haven't had a need to have the MP3 files. I've been so committed to the streaming service aspect of it. And, you know, it's gotten to the point when I'm buying actual music, I'm buying vinyl and then using the download code to get the MP3 codes. I'm not hipster enough for you. I gotta only buy vinyl.
but But they're right there with you, right? Like, they just want to, as we've been saying all show, like, they want to make it so hard for you to quit Prime at this point. Like, the idea of not renewing your Prime, it would be so painful at this point if you're using even just three of their offerings.
Yep. Which is funny because they had me at the one or two day shipping. Like, that was the first Prime benefit that you got all those years ago, and now I can't live without that. So it's funny.
Well, but they bumped up the price too, right? Didn't it go from $79 to $99 fairly recently, right?
Yep.
And people grumbled, right? But the more things that they bundle in, the more it feels like, oh, that $99 is a whole suite of things. It's not just one thing.
Yep. Cool.
I guess I'm up next. Sorry. That was a really smooth segue, wasn't it, Ron?
There you go. We're pros. We don't need Jason. Who needs Jason?
Apropos of nothing we just discussed about Amazon, Google released a new I.O. app. Google I.O. is next week, you guys, and everyone's really sad because they're probably not going. Sorry, Ron. But you want, sorry, I didn't mean to quite rub it in that way, but you want this app because this app will let you stream a bunch of sessions at I.O., the keynote, certainly, but then a bunch of developer sessions. You can get the app at the Play Store, search for Google I.O. 2014, and when you install it, you can browse the conference agenda, you can add sessions to your schedule, and then next week, you'll get a little push notification when a session is going to start, and you can watch the live streams for the keynote and other sessions, and you can watch videos which have already been recorded as well. So, you know, if you're following along at home, I think it's worth it to grab this app. And of course, Twit will be covering the keynote live on Wednesday morning. And Leo and Jeff and myself, and I'm sure as many more guests as we can kind of gather up and bring with us to Petaluma, will be in studio Wednesday afternoon, also discussing all of Google's goodies and announcements on Wednesday afternoon.
Even though I'm not going, I am very excited. It is a fun event now, and it will be fun to watch from home to see what's happening. And so,
yeah, it will be.
Although I wonder what World Cup game is they're going to be competing against. That's going to be what I'm going to be watching at that moment. So we'll see what happens. So, interestingly enough, speaking of also some interesting developments on the Google side, on the Android side, somewhat influenced by Apple and iOS. With the recent iOS announcements that Apple is developing their own predictive keyboard, our friends over at SwiftKey, which has been a fantastic predictive keyboard, that's the one I use on my phone, in reaction to that, they have moved from charging $3.99 for their app to making it totally free. So if you've been on the fence about trying SwiftKey and something that, you know, the price tag was a bit too much for you, now's your chance. You can get SwiftKey for free, and it will be free from here on out. And this is an interesting example of, like we were speaking earlier, when, you know, similar to the Google with the fitness apps, this is a particular case where both Google's developed their own keyboard and continues to, and now Apple is developing their own predictive keyboard, even though opening the iOS platform up to third-party keyboard applications. How, you know, can a company like SwiftKey compete with the native stock keyboard that comes with these phone devices? And it looks like SwiftKey is going to keep on trying, and the first step is by making it free. So that's interesting to note there. Additionally, the Nike Fuel Band finally launched on Android, which we were talking before the show, is a curious launch considering that Nike shut down the Fuel Band project. So I was waiting to buy a Fuel Band until it was available for Android. Now it is, but now I know there won't be more development for it. I don't know if I would buy it or not. So yeah, but either way, if you've been waiting for Nike Fuel Band, it is now available on Android. So there's two apps that can be yours if you're interested in them. And Gina?
Cool. One more update to Google Now this week. I actually got this one this weekend. I was emailing back and forth with a friend about getting together for brunch and what days and what times. And I swiped over to Google Now the day before, and it showed me the email conversation and said, hey, do you want to put this on your calendar? So Google Now is now sort of trying to infer upcoming events from conversations that you have in your Gmail. And I'll show you that card in Google Now. It actually didn't do it well for me. Like it picked the wrong date and time because we had gone back and forth about a couple of days. So I wound up just swiping it away. But if it had gotten it right, it would have been cool. If that doesn't sound cool, if it sounds creepy to you, you can go into Google Now settings and say, and just check no under the continue to get event suggestions based on Gmail. So essentially Google Now, or Google in general, is checking your email, is looking through your Gmail and auto detecting mentions of dates and times and events and showing you little reminders in Google Now upcoming stuff.
Maybe
have you guys seen this new card?
Maybe Google Now is just siding with your friend, being like, brunch on Sunday at Balthazar? Yeah, you should have called 3 months ago.
it's gonna get critical of your plans. Yeah, it's gonna be
you're gonna take the Brooklyn Queens Expressway on a Saturday. Like, oh, okay. Hope you have a podcast ready, because it just knows. Google just knows so much now. They can tell you like which friend is right. You know, like which one has the better drink suggestion.
Well,
there shouldn't be a line at that place on set. No, yes, there will be.
based on a recent acquisition of OpenTable, yes, there will be.
There will be. Make a reservation. I mean, there's so many stuff that really could do. We were talking about, you know, I was talking about having brunch at my friend's house, but if it had been a restaurant, that would be really interesting if local would have been tied into that. Yeah. It wouldn't be that much of a leap.
Well, it's interesting also because we've been talking, you know, on recent episodes, and we actually got a bunch of email about this, about, you know, the active listening aspect that the phones are doing and the integration with Google Now and that sort of thing. And so, I mean, they're doing their best to get it as predictive and as use as much of that data as possible to, you know, kind of, you know, predict and help you, you know, supposedly to help it, you know, make life easier for you. And we actually got a couple of emails about this from some of our community kind of responding to the always listening aspect. Gina, do you want to read the first one from Andrew?
Yeah, we got the first email from Andrew about this. Andrew writes, I was under the impression that the always listening stuff was for the devices to pick up sound from beacons inaudible by humans to get better location data, or maybe ping your phone with nearby deals and other information. I see it being useful in a mall where you may not get accurate granular location tracking. Of course, if we get bothered with deals from stores, I hope they are opt-in notifications, says Andrew.
Uh-huh. And that beacon stuff, the whole idea, like how Shazam works, how it hears something that we can't hear and pull up some sort of level of data. You know, I'm curious why more people aren't, you know, why we don't become hyper aware of that, of kind of if these phones are listening and if they're hearing these certain things that we're not hearing, that trigger data set combined with your location, you know, like if that actually is happening or can happen or not. That's curious. I don't know. But the other email that we got, which is fantastic and more on the creepy side, Gareth writes in and says, I have an example of Google Now being a little scary. Last December, I was at a house party with friends. I spent the evening chatting up a very attractive young lady who I kind of knew. At the end of the evening, we went our separate ways. The next day, Google Plus recommended her as a friend. One, I have never searched for her on the internet. And two, the party was arranged via Facebook, and I added a calendar entry manually without any attendees. She had an iPhone, probably running some Google services, and I can only assume that Google knew that we were both in the same location at the same time. I'm a big Google fan. I don't really care that it's watching, as it knows everything about me, but it did make me think. So that's weird, too. So the guy's basically chalking up the friend recommendation in Google Plus to the fact that he attended the same party as her. How did Google know?
Yeah, it's like it's a murder mystery where someone doesn't murder anyone. It's like, how did it know?
How did
they get out of the box?
So, I have a hard time believing it was using location data. That's definitely a mutual friend situation. Even if the event was organized on Facebook, right, they probably have mutual friends on Google Plus, right? Like that's how the Google Plus who to follow or Twitter's who to follow. It's all like friends of friends of friends, right? I don't know. I have a hard time. I don't know. Maybe I'm a denier. Do you guys think it was location data? You think that the Google's really like, oh, this iPhone and this other phone were in the same place, so these two should be friends?
If it is, that's is it A, picking up the fact that they're in the same location and for a certain amount of time? Because you're at a party, you're there for what, like 2-3 hours? Like, is there some sort of like correlation? They're like, oh, you're at the same place at the same time, you should be friends. Because if so, there have been numerous concerts and bars I've been to where there have been people there who I would like to have known after the next day, and I didn't have any way to get in touch with them. So if this is something that Google can do, it's a good idea, and I'm all for it.
They both use Google Wallet. One of them remarked to the other one how much they enjoy the Tostitos chips that have the scooping ability. And they're like, yes, these chips are superior to the non-scooping chips. Then they both went out and bought them. And months later, Google was like, oh, these two people bought this, live in the same zip code and bought these scooping chips using Google Wallet. Set. That's how it happened. Got it.
There you go. Well, either way, it's something worth thinking about as far as exactly how much data Google's getting and what they're doing with it and how these apps are all working together to do that. Interesting stuff. Cool. So that said, we want to thank our second sponsor for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. We want to thank 99 Designs for sponsoring this episode. And, you know, a lot of us work in technology and web development, and a lot of us have to, you know, create good websites and good web pages. And to do that, you need some good design. You know, your landing page is your first point of contact with nearly every potential client, whether they're accessing your site from their laptop, tablet, or mobile device. And while the information age prizes many virtues, patience is not among them. That means you only have seconds to make a compelling impression before your visitor finds a reason to go elsewhere. Make your landing page a lean, mean marketing machine that will help you turn first-time visitors into long-time customers. The most successful websites have clear, navigatable, eye-catching designs that are free of clutter. This keeps the visitor focused on what you want them to see, primarily your logo and headline. If you want to work with expert designers on a new landing page or any other design, visit 99designs.com. With over 300,000 designers in their community, the site guarantees you'll get a design you love. What if you could start your next design project today and have dozens of designs to choose from in just 7 days? Well, now you can. Visit 99designs.com/AAA and get a $99 power pack of services for free. A power pack gives you more designer time and attention. 99 Designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design project in 99 Designs' marketplace, and you'll get nearly twice as many designs. So visit 99designs.com/AAA, and we thank 99 Designs for their support of All About Android. They are great. All right, let's take this home and go to the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena!
I have never been more excited to go into the arena than I am this week.
Because you're doing the demos? Or
no, just because that means the show is almost over. let's visit last week's arena poll to see how everything did. Last week we had some great apps, and it looks like Hangar came out in first. It was a nice little spread between all the various apps, with Hangar getting 37% of the votes. Skyscanner Flights got 27%. Shufflepuck Cantina got 20%. And my app comes in last with GoGoBot at 15%. And we have the latest stats on the arena, and through week 23, Jason is last with 5 wins. I've got 6 wins. Gina, you've got 8 wins, and our guests have 4 wins. So that's the arena by the numbers. So that said, since I lost, I will go first, and I'm excited about this app because it's interesting, because it's a kind of app that is the kind of app I've been wishing for. And also the way I used it is I've used it in a different way that I've never had before. So I'm going to get to all that. Basically, this app is called Ready Contact List, and it's in beta. So what's interesting is that it's using the Google Play Services beta testing program. And the folks at Ready Contact List have invited folks to join the beta program and get your access to the app, knowing that it is beta. And so you can't get it through the Google Play Store unless you sign up for their beta. And basically what it is it's a replacement for your contacts and your phone dialer. It is a very visually stunning app. It completely changes the way you interact with your phone. The contact screen, and we're going through here showing the video from the Google Play Store listing, because I don't want to show everybody my phone numbers, but there's a bunch of different ways to scroll through your contacts. You can either skip through by letters, you know, first letter of their names, or you can spin through them like they showed it there, or fly through them in the gallery kind of standpoint. And then it gives you a new caller screen. So when someone calls you, not only do you get to see the photo that you have in there in your contact list of the person calling you, but it also pulls up your recent interactions with them, be it through email or through messaging or through any of the other services that are available in your phone through contacts. So if someone calls you, you can be like, okay, this is somebody who I don't want to talk to, because clearly I've got all these angry emails from them and I want to dodge this call. Or it's just a nice little reminder. Or also it could be pulls up from your calendar. It could be somebody that you're scheduled to meet with, and you see the context of what the phone call might be for. When you finish the call, you get a great little shortcut screen that can let you call somebody back or email them or text message them or follow up with a calendar kind of invite. So it's really, you know, like it's that overhaul of contacts and overhaul of the dialer that we're kind of hoping to see in a future iteration of Android, but it's being done by a third-party developer. So I got really excited when I saw it. I'm using it currently. It hasn't changed my life, but it installed really simply, and it just sits right on top of your phone dialer. It still uses the phone app in the phone to make and receive the calls, but it's using the specific replacement of your contacts and well as receiving calls and making them. So it's Ready Contact List. Now, in order to use this app, you got to go to grabready.com/beta.html. That's their website all about this app. From there, there are three simple steps that you go where you basically apply to be a member of their community in Google+. And once you get approved for that, then you sign up for the beta. And once you get approved for that, you can download the app. So if you go to the Google Play Store and search for Ready Contact List, you won't be able to find it. You got to do that, sign up for the beta first. And the traditional warning of any beta software is that it might be buggy, it might have problems. But from what I read on their community site last night, there's over 10,000 people currently using the app, and they're fixing bugs as quickly as they come up. And like I said, I've been using the app for about a day now, and I haven't had any problems. I've received calls, I've made calls, and I've also been able to utilize all the other functions. If anything, it makes me want to add really nice, crisp photos for all my contacts, because I realize I'm woefully behind on doing that. I've got a whole bunch of, you know, kind of anonymous avatar heads. So it's Ready Contactless Beta. If you want a phone dialer replacement, check it out. It's worth, you know, signing up for the beta takes 2 seconds, and then you can play with the app and have a different dialing experience. All right. So, Kevin, what app did you bring for us? I've got it installed here on my phone.
Okay, I try to think of a way to do this without mentioning the other app, but I can't avoid it. Do you guys know Tasker?
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Tasker's great. Tasker is fine. Tasker is not easy to get into. You arrive and it's just a blank slate. Then it's like, hey, click this plus button or maybe this menu thing. I don't know what'll happen next. Choose from one of these 36 things to see what happens next. It's cool. When you read all the stuff online about what Tasker does and you're like, I wish I could do that, but I don't have time to learn a weird like dialect of programming. Trigger is what I brought to the arena this week. Trigger is... I want to call it an automation engine. That makes it sound way more complicated than it is. It's a really simple way to do it, you know, an if this, then that type thing on your phone. So you install it. It's going to ask for every permission in the world. This is related to Gina's pick. It has to because it can do everything. So I've got it set up right now so that when I'm biking, basically when I, you know, tap my phone or, you know, trigger it on my phone, it turns off Wi-Fi, sets the ringer to vibrate, launches Runkeeper. And, you know, therefore, because the Wi-Fi is off, it doesn't try to connect to my home or whatever. I have it set up to automatically send a text to a service I need to once in a while. When I turn on my Bluetooth headphones that I run with, it automatically like does all the stuff I want it to do when running, like turn the location settings on to like high accuracy. You can just basically think of like, oh, I wish this happened when this happened. And a trigger is really, really easy way to do it. I do all kinds of stuff too at night so that like my phone data and everything else turns off. So I'm not tempted to do that awful like bed reading thing that we all do in the morning and at night, you know? And it's really great. It's also, you can pair it up with another app called Agent, which I believe was in the arena previously. And so you can do all kinds of stuff with Agent involving like your driving, your whatever. It's one of those apps where I can't really just, you know, tell you exactly what it does because it's going to depend on what you want to do with it. But it is really neat. It's free to try out a few of the triggers, I believe. And also, if you're an NFC nerd, by the way, you'll love this app. It's free to try out some of the triggers. I think some of the more advanced ones are like $5 for the pro version. I bought it. It's totally worth it to me. It's really cool.
Cool.
And that's it. Install it. Check it out. See what you can do with it. You know, it's a sandbox that is not written in a foreign language.
Excellent. So Trigger. So Tasker for the rest of us almost.
Boom. That's a much better introduction than I had. Thank you. Tasker
basically created a market for simpler apps. As much as I hate to say it, because I love Tasker.
I know. I love Tasker too. And I think it can actually even work with it. I think you can import some of your tasks. I'm not sure. Read the label, but it is pretty cool.
Excellent. All right, cool. Yeah, no, Tasker is the kind of thing that I've always wanted to do, but it's like the kind of thing I just don't have any time to do. So this seems like it's a little simpler and could go a little faster. So I'm definitely going to check that out. Awesome. All right. So Gina, what have you got for us?
All right. So last week we were talking about app permissions and how Google has changed the way that Android app permissions work, how they kind of group permissions together. If you grant access to a group, if the permissions change, then you don't get a notification. Basically, and then we all discussed how, or at least Jason admitted that he just doesn't read the list of permissions that an app needs. If he needs to install an app, he just installs it and kind of skips through that. And he was feeling like a bad person. And I told him he shouldn't feel like a bad person because he's a busy person and none of us should have to think about privacy just to get through to our apps. So that whole conversation led me to this app. My pick is called Online Privacy Shield. That's what it's listed as in the Play Store. This app must have had a recent name change because it's also known as My Permissions. So when you install it, the icon is named My Permissions. It's by the company My Permissions. So I think if you search for My Permissions, it'll come up. But they changed the name of the app. Who knows what's going on with that? It's Online Privacy Shield. Either one will get you this app. It is free with an app purchase. And what Online Privacy Shield does, or My Permissions does, is it scans your Android device and goes through all the apps that you have installed and tells you what apps have what permissions. And it sort of groups up the permissions and says, now, so Ron had his device scanned and look, 69 apps have the ability to act on your behalf or to read and write to storage. And so you can see a list there of the apps. So this is one of those, like, we normally don't have time to think about the implications of the privacy or the permissions that we grant apps on install. But if you want to do an audit, this app is really good at doing so. So Online Privacy Shield, it scans all the apps and then it looks at you know, how many of your apps know your location? 40, apparently, you run. And so when you see the list of all the apps that can see that know your location, you can go through and say, yes, I trust this app, or no, revoke this app's permissions. Revoke means uninstall the app. So let's be clear about that. This app doesn't actually just revoke the permissions. It just lets you uninstall. So that's really handy because you can go through and say, hey, I don't really use this app, but it has access to this information. I'm going to revoke it. The other thing that this app does is it tells you which apps have access to your like online accounts. So you can, if you go into the hamburger menu up there on the top left, I think it's add online service. You tap on add online service, you can say, here's my Twitter account. So you log into Twitter, you give my permissions, ironically, access to your Twitter account. And my permissions will basically monitor which of the apps installed on your device can have access to your Twitter account or your Facebook account or your Flickr account or Foursquare account. So you can also see, you know, which apps are talking to those apps as well, help you avoid an auto tweet, for example. So this is just one of those, if you're a little worried, you know, what permissions have I granted in the heat of downloading, installing an app, this is the app that'll, my permissions will scan for you and let you know. Of course, you know, the obvious question is, why should I trust my permissions, this app, to scan all my permissions? I think that's a really good question. And my permission says, like, they don't store any information about you. They're here. Literally, the app exists, and I think it actually exists for Chrome as well. It just exists to let you know. Like, the goal of the app and the company is to make consumers more aware of what permissions and rights their various bits of software have. So I really liked it. It was informative. I didn't do a full audit and uninstall a bunch of stuff, but it is really sort of interesting and eye-opening to see, hey, you know, how many apps can read my contacts or see my SMS, for example. It's not the prettiest app in the world. It's got kind of a weird, like the text seems really big to me. I don't know. It's got some of the more modern Android design principles, but it works. It does what it says. So that's all I got. It's Online Privacy Shield, also known as My Permissions, and it's free.
This is a horrifying application, Gina.
Did I just scare the bejesus out of you?
I'm absolutely horrified that 75 apps require access to my info. That 74 of them access personal info. that 69 of them can act on my behalf.
Well, so it's interesting. Like, I agree. Like, that's kind of scary language. And you look at that, you're like, 69 can act on my behalf. And then it's like, well, Dropbox can write to your to your internal storage. Well, sure, of course it can, right? Like, I download files. Like, and so most of it, you're like, oh, yeah, of course, this makes complete sense. This app needs this permission for this reason. Other times it's not as obvious, right? But the point is that this app helps you see all in one place.
And that's really interesting because, like, for example, like here I'm looking at the 55 apps read my inbox and contacts, which at first glance is also horrifying. And then as I scroll it, I realize, oh, barcode scanner. Well, why would barcode scanner want to read my access to my inbox or contacts? But if I read it, it says read the user's contacts data, read but not write the user's browsing history and bookmarks. Now, that makes sense because from barcode scanner, I can send someone a link from the barcode that I've scanned, or I can, you know, bookmark, you know, like it makes sense once I see it. It's like, oh, yeah, that's what it does. Okay, cool.
I wish I'd run this a week ago when I went to Target and I used the Cartwheel app for a coupon for 5% off kitty litter. And then it shared to Facebook with everyone that I was interested in 5% off kitty litter.
Well, let's be honest, Kevin, you were.
I mean, who isn't really?
Yeah, I know.
But it was like, why did, now I'm just going to quit Facebook and install this app.
Wow. All right. So those are some three great apps. We got Trigger, Ready Contactless Beta, and My Permissions or Online Privacy Shield. You can vote for your favorite app over at AAApoll.com/166. That's AAApoll.com/166. And you can be heard. We worked very hard and laboriously to get you this poll this week. So make sure you go in and make your vote. And currently Online Privacy Shield is in the lead with 5 votes, and Trigger and Ready Contactless Beta have got 3 of each one. So we'll see how it all nets out next week. So good stuff. All righty. Well, Kevin, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Why don't you tell the folks what you're up to and where they can find you online?
Okay. I am at thepurdman.com. I'm at Kevin Purdy on Twitter. I've been blogging pretty regularly for IT World, writing columns every week. I just wrote a piece for The Magazine, which is the Glenn Fleischman publication about typography. It's really super type nerdy, but it's awesome, I think. And I do also have been doing a lot of reviews for The Sweet Home and The Wirecutter lately, which are both great sites. And I'm particularly working on something for The Wirecutter about a best Android app in its class. So I can't wait to put that out.
Cool.
Ooh, that's a good teaser right there.
Yeah, thank you.
I got to admit, I love your domain, the Purd Man. I like that.
Long story, but thank you.
I believe it.
It is accurate.
All right, Gita, how about you? Where can folks find you online?
Oh, well, when I'm not here doing All About Android on the Twit Network, I am working on ThinkUp. ThinkUp.com is my company and my product. It's social analytics, social media analytics for regular people, just trying to get their do their thing online. You should check it out, ThinkUp.com. And when I'm not doing All About Android, I am doing This Week in Google with Leo and Jeff, and that airs here on the Twit Network on Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. You should come on by and watch. Tomorrow I'll be on, and next week I'll be live with those guys. I'll be live with you and Jason on Tuesday night before I.O., and I'll be live with Jeff and Leo in the studio on Wednesday as well. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Ooh, I can't wait. That's my favorite show of the year when we all get to do it in person.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. So also helping us steer the good ship All About Android is Brian behind the TD desk. Brian,
steering it straight into that iceberg.
Right in.
Good job tonight, Ron. I only had a couple of critiques, but we can talk about that later.
But you've got some notes for me?
Yeah. We're going to have a talk. But you can find me on Twitter at @cranky_hippo. I also co-host a show called Know How with Father Robert Ballester on Thursdays, if you want to check that out. And more recently, I did a review this week on a action cam, which seems to be the tendency when I do a review on BYB. So if you feel the need to check out an action cam or something like that, check out my Google Plus page. And that's about it.
Well, Brian has a lot to plug.
Sorry.
It seems to be increasing every week.
Well, yeah. What about you, Ron?
Finally. finally, if you enjoy my nonsense, you can go to about.me/RonXO, where you can find links to my Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that fun stuff. And by day, you can find me over at imagecomics.com, where I help the fine folks over there put out some of the best comic books in the world, including The Wicked and Divine and Sex Criminals, which are coming out this week. So go to your local comic book store and check those out, or you can go to imagecomics.com and download them. We're very excited. Additionally, Jason's not here, but if he was here, he would plug the new show on the Twit Network, the Android App Arena, which is the great kind of extension, kind of our cousin show now of All About Android, where Jason's focusing in on individual apps and giving them their kind of highlights that they deserve. It launched last week. Watch the first episode. It is awesome. So you want to go to twit.tv/arena, where you can see the new dedicated Android App Arena. And it's pretty great. I gotta give Jason credit. He puts together a good show. And I have immense respect for him, especially after tonight. So, yeah. So go to twit.tv/arena. But in the meantime, that's it for this week. Kevin, thanks for joining us. It's always great to have you.
Thanks so much.
If you want to participate with the show, we want to hear from you. You can call the voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. Or you can email us or send a link to a video mail at our email address at AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter at Android Show. Go to Reddit for the twitaa.reddit.com, the subreddit there with All About Android. As always, you can find all the show notes at twit.tv/AAA. And, of course, we're on YouTube and iTunes and wherever else you like to watch online video. And you catch us live every Tuesday starting about 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That's it for All About Android. We made it together. We'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us.
Good job, Ron.
Good job, man.
Oh, wow.